The invisible can make the visible understandable. You're listening to Western Worlds. Hello, and welcome back for another conversation here on Western Worlds. My name is Raymond Francis, and I'm coming to you this week, as every week, from the Center for Planetary Science and Exploration at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada. X-rays were discovered over a century ago, as part of the gradual realization that the electromagnetic spectrum was much broader than the familiar visible light. While they're best known for their utility in medical imaging and security applications, they have a great many other uses besides looking at the insides of things. Each atom has characteristic wavelengths of X-ray emission when its electrons are excited. Each molecular crystal scatters X-rays in predictable ways. And many types of diagnostic techniques have been developed to make use of these properties in identifying and understanding the materials and chemistry of the world, to recognize the helical structure of DNA, for example. Dr. Ian Campbell is Professor Emeritus of Physics at the University of Guelph, with a long career in advanced applications of X-ray diagnostics. He's also a co-investigator on the Alpha Particle X-ray Spectrometer instrument on the Mars Science Laboratory mission. APXS, the Canadian Space Agency's contribution to the Curiosity rover, is an important tool for understanding the chemical composition of the rocks and soils encountered by the rover on its trek across Gale Crater. Western World's Parshati Patel spoke with Dr. Campbell about the history of X-ray geochemical studies on Mars and the current X-ray investigation techniques available on Curiosity.
So thank you very much for talking to us today. You are one of the co-investigators of APXS on the MSL mission. So would you describe what APXS is and how important it is as a part of the MSL rover?
Yeah, it's one of two instruments that does elemental chemistry. What elements are in the rocks and how much. And it is easily deployed. It's very small. It sits at the end of an arm. It uses the physics of X-ray emission. It uses fairly standard techniques, condensed down into something as small as a soup can. And most rocks that we see, the APXS is deployed, and it gives you an average chemical content.
If I understand correct, we have been sending rovers to Mars and trying to understand what the contents of the whole Martian surface are. How is APXS different from what we have sent before?
It's actually the same. APXS goes way back. There was an old instrument on Viking, which was a kind of forerunner. The same sort of basic ideas, but by today's standards, pretty 20th century. And then on the Pathfinder mission, there was an advanced version with more modern methods of X-ray detection. And that advanced again with a German lab making the instruments for Spirit and Opportunity. There were several of these, one on each rover and several in the lab on the ground for testing and playing with. And the latest MSL version is just another advance. It gets the data three times faster. And it catches a little more data than before. Some of the range of data was cut off on the earlier missions because it didn't really look like there was anything interesting in it. And you should never cut out any possible data you can get in science. It turned out that that region of the data that seemed uninteresting was actually full of interesting information. So Dr. Gellert has designed the MSL instrument to include everything you can possibly get, and nothing is neglected. A very good move.
Yeah, so when we are talking about using an instrument to understand something that is billions of kilometers away, what comprises of this instrument that helps us understanding, you know, just by looking at the rock or these, you know, the soil on Mars to understand what it's made up of. So how exactly does APSX work?
How does it work? It's got a rather nasty radioactive material in it, a lot of it. You've got to be very careful handling of this stuff in the lab where the instrument is built and assembled. And the precautions in the lab at Guelph are remarkable in their depth. That material emits two kinds of radiation, one called alpha particles and one called X-rays. And when they strike the Martian sample, or any sample, both the alpha particles and the X-rays excite the atoms in that sample into emitting their own private, personal, characteristic X-rays. So iron has an X-ray, it has a signature. It says, I am an iron X-ray. So does silicon, so does magnesium, so does calcium, and so on and so on. The beauty of this is that the alpha particles, they're the analog of a technique used on Earth in labs called PIXE, particle-induced X-ray emission. That's what I work on. And that's really good for the lightest elements like sodium, magnesium, aluminum, silicon, and so on. The X-rays coming out of the source, they correspond to an everyday technique on Earth, and I mean a real everyday technique. You can buy it from suppliers, all sorts of levels of sophistication, called X-ray fluorescence. They're very good at it right here at Western, very good at it. So you have XRF, as it's called, exciting by a different piece of physics, the heavier elements like iron, nickel, zinc, bromine, and so on. So you have two techniques in one, and they're each optimized for a different range of elements so that when they're put together, you've got the equivalent in this little instrument the size of your soup can or coffee mug, which is equivalent to some millions of dollars worth of fancy hardware in a terrestrial lab. Hardware that you have at this university, but there's no way you could send it up to Mars.
So if I understand correct, APSX was actually made at University of Guelph?
Not quite. The previous APXS on the Spirit and Opportunity, they were made in the lab of the Max Planck Institute for Cosmochemistry in Germany. And things like circuit boards were contracted out. But the two guys, Rudy Rieder and Ralph Gellert, they, mostly Ralph, put that instrument together. So that, and I'll tell you a great story, just before the rockets were taking off to take Spirit and Opportunity to Mars, the test instrument in Germany started emitting smoke. It was in a chamber with a Martian atmosphere in it. Everything was for testing it. And so there was something wrong, and they called NASA, and Ralph Gellert was there, and he was about to depart to come home because everything was on the rover and ready to go, or just going on the rover, I'm not sure. And they brought the instruments off, and Ralph sat for 24 hours or something continuously with an optical magnifier on his head, taking these things apart until he found where a little bolt going through a hole had dropped off tiny shavings that were short-circuiting something. He found it, he fixed it, he changed the bolt, and the instruments were reloaded, and Opportunity has been running for, 9, 10 years? I don't know, it was a 90-day mission. So, yes, he built them, and he saved the mission.
Yeah.
Right? It's all in Steve Squires' book. It's a wonderful book by Steve Squires. Your listeners should read it, called Roving Mars. Steve Squires is the leader of the MIR mission. So the MSL, Curiosity Rover, APXS, the concept was the same. Improvements to it were out of Ralph Gellert's brain, with a little bit of nudging from me on this, on including the whole spectrum and not just parts of it. And he improved its efficiency, as I think I maybe said, by a large factor. And then the construction was all contracted out to McDonald Detweiler, who are the robotics people in Toronto, the Canada Arm. And they were in this from the beginning, working very closely. So it's a three-way thing. Ralph Gellert's group at Guelph, design, testing, all the radionuclide stuff, the space agency, and MDA, with their engineers looking at how to couple the electronics of the instrument to the rover electronics and the rover computers and so on. So that was a much bigger operation than the little in the lab one back in Germany.
Yeah.
But in between the standards for the instrument dictated by NASA had gone up. Vibration testing, temperature testing, how long is it going to last? Really needed the sort of rigorous testing that can only be done by McDonnell Detweiler.
So APXS uses material that, you know, it has to be taken care of if you're using here on Earth. So is it actually used by, you know, geologists or, you know, not in the field?
No, it could not be used in the field because of the radioactive material. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could take it out in the field, but you'd end up being fined very heavily, quite appropriately, by the Nuclear Safety Commission.
Okay. So how does the calibration for that work then if we are not testing it here on the Earth rocks, I would say?
Good question. You're taking all sorts of National Geological Surveys and the National Institute for Standards in the States, and CanMet in Ottawa will sell you geological standard reference materials, which have been analyzed every which way so that all the element concentrations are very well known. And if you don't quite believe them, you can go to a terrific company right here in Ontario and get them to do it a second time over. And we've done that, and we really should publish something because the results generally agree very well, but we see a few extra things with the APXS that's so sensitive. So you can get representative samples of most terrestrial rock types as powders, shove them into the twin instrument at Guelph, and calibrate it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was talking about here today, mm-hmm. how you calibrate it.
Okay. So now if APXS is on Mars, if you are looking for material that is different from Earth, how would that impact understanding Mars? Because, you know, we would assume it's made up of same material, given what we know of the theory of the formation of planets and things like that. But
there could be something new.
Yeah.
And we're seeing there's a sort of very popular diagram that the geochemists use, which classifies all the different igneous rocks into different sectors of a sort of two-dimensional map. And we're beginning to see rocks on Mars at this location we didn't see before, which are pretty rare on Earth, and we've not found official standards for them. So a big job for us, and especially for me in the near future, is to start hunting down these rocks, start finding collaborators who have these rocks, and then grind them up, powder them, press them into pellets, and run them on a different system in my lab, which is equivalent but has a lot of advantages, one of them being we don't have any nasty radioactive sources to deal with, and we don't have the time needed to go through all the precautions. We can just shove them in and run them. So one aim in my group is to, which is sort of loosely attached to the main APXS team, is to get on with looking at these other more exotic rocks that we are finding. They're not the majority, but we're finding some very intriguing ones that we have not standardized or calibrated for.
Okay. And so would you mind to describe how different your lab is compared to APXS, what you have? So as you mentioned, it does not have the radioactive material, so students can work on it. What else is different from APXS so that would give you different or maybe better quality of, you know, information from these samples? Yeah.
APXS has got alpha particles coming out of the source. They're going in all directions. With my particle accelerator, which is very similar to the one you have at Western, I can make a beam. I don't use alpha particles, I use protons. It's much the same thing. The physics is almost the same. I can make a beam of protons in one direction. I can control that. I can focus it to look at a little place in the sample, here, there, this grain, that grain, somewhere else. Can't do that with APXS. It's just going to spray of these alpha particles over 2 or 3 centimeters of diameter. That particle accelerator does have radiation safety regulations, but it just requires a small training course. When we switch it off, any radiation goes away. But in practice, the radiation background in my lab is less than the radiation background outside on the campus, because the lab is in the basement, shielded by concrete, and the equipment emits hardly anything. There's no radioactive material involved. It's a beam of protons made by physics and engineering down a vacuum pipe, hits the sample, X-ray detector is looking in. My X-ray detector will be the same today, tomorrow, and next year, unless somebody takes it out and drops it on the floor. But in the APXS lab, it degrades over time because it's next door to this intense source which emits other particles which are not useful but which slowly damage the detector. So its ability to resolve the different elements slowly degrades. It starts out worse than mine and it gets worse. Mine starts out better, and if you gave me $15,000, I could buy an even better one, because they get better. I'm just back from a conference where I saw the newest technology, and it's incredible. They really are getting to the limit of what fundamental physics allows. Resolving power is tremendous. So I can position my samples better. I can measure them with better energy resolution. I can measure them 7 times faster. There is essentially no radiation problem. To come into my lab, you must get a half-hour training course from me, and then you can come in anytime we're running and participate. You simply cannot go into the APXS lab unless you are one of a very small group, less than the fingers on one hand, who are allowed to go in there for operating that system.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got huge flexibility and huge speed of getting stuff done. And it's not that I'm somehow smarter, it's just totally different context.
It's also possible to do it better. I mean, you'll get better funding if you have something that doesn't have a radioactive material on it, right?
Well, it may not be the funding. We had good funding, and our funding went up this year, which testifies to the fact that people agree with me that it's the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I really want to assemble some of these more exotic rocks we're seeing and see if we're well calibrated for them,
mm-hmm.
or if there are some corrections, or if something is different, or what.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I don't know. Don't know the answer.
Yeah, well, that's...
Why, you might ask, why did we not do this back in the beginning? Well, we were basing it on what rocks did Spirit and Opportunity see. And let's add every kind of other rock type that you can get as standards. And we were helped by a former Western research associate, Penny King, who's now a rather senior position in Australia. It was she who, with a little bit of help from Gallup and myself, it was she who really dictated the range of standards we were going to have, and it's really all-encompassing for terrestrial rocks.
Mm-hmm.
But
Martian is a different story.
New ones.
Yeah. And so APXS is still young on MSL, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And so would you mind to highlight a couple of, discoveries that have led using APXS on Mars?
I'd say APXS is fundamental to all the rock discoveries because it's not spectacular. The spectacular thing is the X-ray diffraction. To make a thing like that work on Mars is incredible. There was a session on MSL, something called the Denver X-ray Conference, which is North America's biggest X-ray analysis conference. Special session, one of the heads of the X-ray diffraction group talked, then I talked, and then one of the other instrument team members talked that was not X-ray techniques. And what the X-ray diffraction people have done is spectacular. You go into the X-ray diffraction lab here and see all the things that have to move and the way the specimen has to be. And you think of all the gears and gizmos that are required to drill and dig and scoop and sieve and put this soil into some device which keeps it shaking about randomized using a tuning fork to do this. And then to do X-ray diffraction, it's a historic technological achievement. And it happened 100 years exactly after the discovery of X-rays. So that was when I left listening to that fabulous talk by Dave Bish in the Denver conference. So that's the spectacular stuff. APXS, this is a workhorse. We come to a rock, run APXS. Get a picture, run APXS. And maybe you do a lot of other things, but then just every now and then you run the very complex chemistry labs inside. You look for small amounts of water or perchlorates or carbon dioxide by various very clever chemical techniques. Maybe you do X-ray diffraction to get the mineralogy, but that's time consuming, and the people who run the mission are very selective about when they're going to do this. You heard one person today saying they wish it was done more often. Well, we all do, but it's very careful debate about when it's really important to do it. And I think you will see more of it now that we're at Mount Sharp, which is the real objective of the mission. We've seen other things on route. So the thing that excited me most, well, one thing that excited me about APX was that very first unusual rock, Jake Machevich rock. He was a famous engineer for NASA, he's now passed on. That excited me because A, it was the first APXS measurement on this mission. B, it was totally different from anything we'd ever seen on Spirit or Opportunity. And three, rocks like that come from where I was born, Scotland. So that was special. The biggest discovery of the mission was the clays found within the basaltic rock at Yellowknife Bay, in the mudstones of Yellowknife Bay. That was principally the X-ray diffraction instrument, Chem-Min. APX was playing a solid supporting role in telling the Chem-Min people what elements were there. And that's one reason I'm interested in continuing to pursue what is the accuracy of APXS for the light elements. There's a correlation between the mineralogy and the elemental chemistry, and there's a sort of circle. Mineralogy determines your results for the elemental chemistry, but the mission is using the elemental chemistry to go back in and help with the unraveling of the mineralogy.
Mm-hmm.
It's very complex.
So that is very interesting. We look forward to, you know, getting more discoveries out of APXS and Chem-Min, obviously. So thank you for talking to us today, and we are hoping to, you know, read more about APXS in the news now.
Sure you will.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Western Worlds. Let's go to the discussion.
So, APSX, Ian Campbell, what were your thoughts?
Really interesting piece of instrument on
sure.
Another planet.
Yeah.
I was a bit overcome with all the definitions. I mean, APXS doesn't exactly relate for most people, so 20,
oh, yeah.
Is it?
Oh yeah, it's the alpha particle X-ray spectrometer.
Mm.
So it basically shoots into a rock or a soil or whatever the target is, and they analyze what is reflected back. In here, it's the X-rays. You're trying to detect X-rays when alpha particles are emitted when you hit. Whatever rock or soil it is, and they are basically trying to understand the chemical components of that target. So you can do that while sitting here, just with the press of a button.
This is amazing. It's equipment that we have in labs here, but they've managed to get this equipment to go, and it's now been on a number of different rovers, right from the beginning, I think.
Well, it's definitely been on the Spirit and Opportunity rovers, the exploration rovers, and that was interesting because it was. This is a more advanced version that's now on MSL on the Curiosity.
The Mars Science Lab, right?
Yeah, exactly right. But it's a very small device. They're able to fit this device into a very tiny area, which is an advantage it has over other instruments that are trying to look at particles of matter in similar ways. There are some types of instruments which are just very, very large, because they have to be.
Yeah.
And this is a very compact instrument that's quite versatile. So it was quite, I enjoyed the listen to him talk about how his instrument works, he went into a lot of detail, which is like practical detail, which is always refreshing to hear. It's nice to hear.
So if I understand correctly, these alpha particles, which are heavy helium nuclei, get fired into the sample. It excites whatever the sample is, and that gives off X-ray emission. And from the frequency, you put it in this in a spectrometer, and so from the frequencies that you get back, you can then detect what you've got in your sample, what elements are available.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty sophisticated piece of equipment.
Yeah, so they do this on, so for the MSL, the Mars Science Laboratory, which is the Curiosity rover, they also have like a dust removal tool, so they can, you know, just look at this rock, hit it with the APX, see what the elements is, and then, you know, dust it off and try it again.
Is there a little a hand that comes out with a glove with a little brush on it and just brushes and then disappears again?
Yeah, that's exactly something like that.
Very high tech.
And then hit it again. So you get to see what's, like, you know, inside. Like, you know, just if you dust off the dust off your books and see what actually the book is, you know? So this is very cool. Like, you know, you would get to kind of know the second or the third layer in a sample, which, you know, normally you would just be sitting there shooting at things. And because of how, you know, dusty Mars is, you know, there are the smaller dust devils and global storms. I mean, I'm assuming most of the rocks would probably be covered, if there was a storm, probably be covered by the dust. And so to kind of know the original composition, you would have to kind of dust things off. So that was a smart tool they put in with the APXS. And obviously then they also have like the chemical analysis lab, which does obviously the chemical analysis of whatever scoop they scoop things off. So they scoop the soil off and then put it in the thing to kind of figure out what the chemicals are. So pretty cool set to kind of see what elements you have while really not doing much stuff.
Exactly. So I think it has the instrument itself has the detection range is very broad. And of course, Ian was saying that he's been involved since, since the beginning of the development of that instrument, all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
So he has the ultimate level of knowledge about how it works and where improvements can be made or how to get the most out of that instrument. And again, it was like really interesting listening to him tell us the stories about it and its development. For instance, he was able to save the instrument, or he met with one of his colleagues from Germany, was able to save the instrument.
Oh yes.
So that was very interesting.
It went well over its expected lifetime.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
I mean, those kinds of stories are stories that I've heard. I've heard a lot of those kinds of stories about instrumentation on satellites and thinking that this satellite is dead, and then jury rigging away to save it at the last minute, and then it goes on for years and years passes. There are countless stories like that. So it was really nice hearing a story like that from Ian, because, you know, it's that kind of ingenuity which a lot of people, they think it's just a kind of fictional Star Trek thing, but it's not. People genuinely are able to improvise with their knowledge and you know, find the things that are going wrong. Sometimes they're very simple, sometimes they're kind of complicated, but it's always interesting to hear about that kind of turnaround.
So now that this instrument is actually a contribution from the Canadian Space Agency, right?
The Curiosity's APXS was developed by CSA.
Okay.
MDA here in the Kitchener-Waterloo area was the company that actually built it, and the science team included people from Guelph, here at Western, New Brunswick, NASA, UCAL, and Cornell. So, in all, a Canadian instrument on Mars.
So. Which is performing pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
He seemed quite excited about where the Curiosity is, and is it Mount Sharp?
it is going to go to Mount Shasta.
And then he was pretty excited about what they're going to be able to detect up there.
Yeah, they're excited, hopefully, to have something different in terms of composition than what they've been looking right now. But we should also mention that Phile, the lander,
yes,
actually also has an AP access on it.
Of course, that's very interesting.
Yeah, to study comets' composition. However, I'm not sure about if there have been any new results from that. Because it kind of died. Lost. In a mountainous region where it did not receive solar light.
I thought that
it woke up for a short while.
It did wake up for a short while, and then battery was low. So, yeah, there's also AP access on that. So, basically, we have been kind of shooting these all over Mars. Now, the comet, to kind of understand the composition. So, looks like the future is bright for this instrument.
It's just so obviously versatile and compact that when you're launching things from Earth, there's a lot of advantages to using a device like that. So, it's a very well-placed device.
It seems to be fit in the size of something that's smaller than a soda can. So, smaller size. If it's not too heavy, that's good on budget.
Yeah.
So, and if it works, just it works the results, I'm sure it's a good instrument to put on all the upcoming missions.
Exactly.
That's our show for this week. Western World is a production of the Center for Planetary Science and Exploration at Western University. Western Worlds was created by John Moores. This episode was produced by and featured an interview by co-host Parshadi Patel. Our roundtable discussion featured co-hosts Parshadi Patel, Tony Martinez, and John Kissy. Our editors were John Kissy and Parshadi Patel, and I'm Raymond Francis. Our theme music is Heliosheath by Sean Kim. You can continue the conversation online and listen to past episodes or learn more about Western Worlds by visiting our website at cpsx.uwo.ca/westernworlds. You can also email us at westernworlds@uwo.ca. On Twitter, we are at WWCPSX, and on Facebook, we are facebook.com/westernworlds. On behalf of everyone here, I'd like to thank you for joining us tonight. I hope you can find world enough in time to join us again next week, right here on Western Worlds.